I think the Twins needed some time to get going last season before the bats came alive. I remember, I think the first road trip of the year, they did hit eight home runs in a game at Baltimore. But everybody hit eight home runs against the Orioles last year. So I'm not sure if that counted. But I don't know if they're built for a sprint. You know, they're a team that's built on power and beating teams into submission.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and this week I'm joined by a baseball writer who covers the Cardinals, let's call it the Cardinals' rival of the future, the challenger for possibly the first ever Midwest Division crown, those slugging Minnesota Twins. Lavelle Neal, a former president of the Baseball Writers Association, got his start covering baseball in Kansas City with the Star, and he's been at the Star Tribune in the Twin Cities on the Twins beat for the past 23 years. To put that in perspective, he started with Paul Molitor's last year and outlasted Paul Molitor's years as manager. We talk baseball's return, the complications of having a shortened season, of testing, of what the game will look like, and of course, a new look division, one that merges the AL Central and the NL Central in this condensed and radically altered calendar that baseball may try to put forth. We, of course, also describe the competitive edge that, get this, driving might have in flyover country. But first, let me tell you about our sponsor here at the best podcast in baseball. Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design specializes in custom closets, pantries, laundry rooms, garages, and more. Now get 40% off plus an additional 15% off with Closets by Design at 314-733-9855. That's Closets by Design, 314-733-9855. The official sponsor of the best podcast in baseball. Now here's my conversation with Star Tribune baseball writer, Lavelle Neal. Lavelle Neal of the Star Tribune. So tell me, what are we calling it? The flyover division, the Midwest Central Division, MLB Central Division? What could this look like with 101-win Twins team, a NLCS berth Cardinals team, and then some of the teams that are just out and out rebuilding? What could this look like?
Yeah, I don't know if you want to call it the I-35 division or just – I like the flyover country one, the flyover country division. That has a nice ring to it.
All the bread basket division?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. The T-Boone Pickens division. where the best wind power was available in the central corner. So it could be interesting for all the central division teams to be lumped in together. It'd be great for travel. I mean, I'm already imagining going to Chicago for a week and, you know, playing the Cubs and the White Sox here at the same time, you know, And I would probably drive to Chicago and drive to Milwaukee and drive to Kansas City. You know, that makes it easier for some of us who are not comfortable yet with getting them back on airplanes. You know, from a competition standpoint, it's kind of fascinating that the Twins and the Cardinals match up, given the status of both those teams. You know, the Twins are coming up 101 wins and hit a major league record 307 home runs last season. And, one of the unintended positive developments of the shutdown is that Rich Hill was not supposed to be able to join the club until mid-July as he recovered his elbow procedure. We can't call it Tommy John because he had the newfangled elbow procedure that I think one of your Cardinals pitchers had a couple years ago. Or maybe
I wrote about it rather extensively, the modified Tommy John or the primary repair surgery.
That's what it is, and he'll supposed to be ready to contribute by mid July, and now he'll be available for the team for whatever length of schedule the Twins will play, and he has a better chance of hitting all the incentives he had in his contract, which
that's fascinating.
It will be stung a little bit about, but they probably won't mind if Hill contributes to a team that repeats as division champions. Milwaukee, you know, seems to figure out a way to remain competitive. So they'll be in the mix. The Cubs are trying to bounce back a little bit. You know, But the Twins and Cardinals matchup would be interesting. The White Sox are thinking that their time is coming with Yoan Moncada at third and Luis Robert's supposed to take over in center, and they already have Eloy Jimenez. Lucas Giolito's leading the rotation. I'm not sure if Michael Kopech was going to be able to contribute this year or not. That's a team with a lot of young talent that is trying to come into its own. And so they could be a pest. Cleveland is trying to hold on to what they have. In the last couple of off seasons, you know, they've had to kind of take a step back. Because attendance dropped, I think, between 2018 and 2019. And they make some moves, and they finally say goodbye to Corey Kluber this offseason. You know, but they've got a couple of pitching prospects coming into play this year. So it would be a really cool division, I think, to get all these teams together and stay regional. And I'm curious to see what the National League teams would do now, knowing that they're going to have to come up with DH options. Who has credible DH options, or will just have to, you know, draw straws to see who would take over that role?
Yeah, I'm real interested that, like, because the two divisions seem like mirror images of each other in a way, mm-hmm. in the sense that, like, you have the two teams that stood out last year and went to the playoffs, and the Cardinals and the Twins. And then mm-hmm. you kind of work backwards in opposite directions. Both of these mm-hmm. divisions have teams that look like they're ready to make the next step. That's the Reds and the White Sox. And then you kind of have, you know, teams in the NL Central, one that is really rebuilding, like tanking to rebuild, and the Pirates, two others that are kind of searching for their identity, the Cubs and the Brewers, who could be contenders. They have a lot of talent, or actually could pivot real quick and become rebuilding teams. You have, like, the Pirates element is the Kansas City Royals on your side. And then, as you detail, the Cleveland, I just think they're fascinating overlaps. But what stands out to me is all of a sudden that red carpet ride to the postseason for the Twins may not be as easy as maybe if they just played within their own division, or if all things being equal, they were just in the American League, right? I mean, they were the clear favorite. And is that the case in flyover country?
Oh, no, I think the path definitely is a little, I think the path's a little bit tougher for the Twins if they've got to play their National League counterparts in the same division, just because of the Cardinals and, you know, and the Cubs and the Brewers, those two teams being, you know, still kind of credible teams that could jump up and be pests. I didn't even mention the Reds. The Reds had a heck of an offseason. And adding to the roster, and already having us some talent in place, you know. And I'm happy. Actually, I'm happy to see Cincinnati make moves like that, because I thought they kind of wasted a chunk of Joey Votto's career, as he's been like a great hitter for years, but they haven't had much around him. It was almost, he was like the Alex Ovechkin of baseball for a while there. Ovechkin's now won a couple Stanley Cups, you know, or one Stanley Cup at least. So, no, it would not be a divine procession to the throne wins on this format. It's going to have to come a little tougher, but you know what? That's a good thing though. I mean, they'll have to prove themselves over and over again, you know, but you look at the Central or a flyover division. You look at how the divisions on the left or the right coast are going to be set up. And I'm sure there's going to be National League teams grumbling about, you know, running up against the Yankees or running up against a Rays team that has a heck of a pitching staff, you know, and right. and the Yankees and the Yankees and Rays are going to be grumbling about the fact that this hot up and coming team in the Braves are now in the same division as they are, and the Nationals, great pitching staff, you know. So it's going to lead to some fascinating matchups. So it makes you want this to happen. You make you really want the players in the union to come up on a plan to move forward, so we can have baseball to see how this all plays out. Because, you know, Someone sent me I did a mailbag that ran in online a couple of days ago, or yesterday actually, and a reader asked, should there be an asterisk placed next to the winner here just because of the season? Well, baseball's had shortened seasons before because of labor unrest, you know? And to be honest with you, everything's been affected by this virus. You won't have to put an asterisk on anything, because as soon as you say year 2020, everybody's going to remember that was the virus year. And so I was like, the virus is going to be the asterisk instead of having to officially put one in. Whoever wins in 2020, you know,
they'll put that little like emoji with the little crown of spikes coming off of it, like for the coronavirus. Everybody will just see it. And you know, it's interesting because like I get that question a lot, and I wonder about it. Like the Dodgers have invested so much in this season as far as ending their long run here without a World Series title, their two runner-up finishes to two teams that were investigated for sign stealing, both of whom were found some level of guilty. You know, you just think of, like you talked about with Joey Votto, you think about like the Clayton Kershaw era with the Dodgers. Are they really going to have the best left-handed pitcher, one of the best starters of his generation, maybe the best starter? Well, he and Max Scherzer are probably the best starters of their generation. Scherzer has his title. Is Kershaw going to go a career without one, having been stopped once by the Astros, who probably had his signs, or definitely did, and once by the Red Sox, and now they trade for Mookie Betts, and this whole thing happens? I mean, if they win it all, do we write that, hey, they won a World Series, but they still haven't had a complete championship season since the 80s? I mean, I think it's interesting because they have a lot invested in this one season, particularly with Mookie Betts and that trade. And yet, if it goes by the wayside, or it's a different looking kind of season, does that change how they celebrate or how they explain why, once again, they didn't win?
I know. And, you know, and the additional thing with Kershaw, too, is that he has not been a sterling performer in the postseason. And I'm sure he is going to want that stage to prove that be the man in the postseason. But I think it's fascinating. But, you know, and if you just look at the broader picture, every sport is going to have a unique season. You know, the NBA and hockey may or may not resume, but if they do, they may have some funky format to determine the final playoff teams and then have a funky postseason. You know, everything's going to be altered here. It's going to lead to some interesting arrangements. The NFL is the only league that may be able to operate normally through this thing just because of the timing matter. But for baseball, basketball, and hockey, we're all going to see things. We've already seen things that we've never seen before. We may see scheduling and setups and formats that we've never seen before. So it across the board, they're all going to be everyone's going to be wondering, well, is some of the luster of this title taken away because it came in this virus year of 2020? I would tend to say no. Like I said, I don't think the 95 and 81 World Series champions were tainted at all.
We probably don't remember them as World Series champs, not as like, oh, well, shortened season World Series champs.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Although I would say this though, Derek, though, because now I'm hearing rumblings that, you know, we're hearing rumblings that the players and the owners are haggling over a path to move forward may lead to even a shorter schedule, maybe games or so. Now, once you're down to 60 games, then you're going to have to start asking yourself, wow, this is really a truncated year. And then maybe the argument about this being so unique that the champion may not be viewed as a real champion could be a more valid argument.
It is possible that the team that wins the championship will have to play more than 80 games, however, though, like, because you're talking about an expanded playoff, regardless of what it comes after, an 80 game, 100 game, or 60 game schedule. The idea would be to have a wildly expanded and perhaps even like October Madness level playoff, which actually could result in a funky World Series pitting two American League teams against one another.
Here's the
you know, if you think about it.
Here's the thing, too. The Twins already know that if they make a run somehow and they're in the World Series, like their games have to be played in Texas or Miami.
Oh, interesting.
Because if you're playing, if this goes until November, as it, if you need to have expanded playoffs, you're probably playing, definitely playing games in November. November in Minnesota is not the best weather, you know?
Yeah. There's neither would it be in St. Louis.
Right. So there's been discussions about, you know, neutral sites for some of these playoff games involving your northern teams. And Texas have been mentioned. Now,
the South California plan, like you could have three fields, you know, Arizona, San Diego, or four, Dodger Stadium and Anaheim, kind of all in that small little area that, well, not small, but reasonable travel area.
Well, that's another thing that I wonder if the league will consider, because let's just say it's the Dodgers and the Twins, you know, the rematch of what, the 65 World Series or whatever.
Yeah.
If they end up meeting, maybe they have the Twins use Chase Field as a home stadium. And now you've got easier travel between
the Twins. Or just Anaheim.
Or Anaheim and make it a crosstown series, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder if the league has that type of flexibility.
Centrally located. It'll be interesting. Tell me more about kind of the Twins. Okay, so last year, 307 home runs, as you mentioned. You know, then they go out and add Josh Donaldson. So does that mean that they're more power packed? You know, they have the Mizzou kid, Kyle Gibson. They also have a local kid, Jake Odorizzi, whose return is probably a really good thing. And does that add to maybe like sort of their thought that this is a year where they could have really made that step in the playoffs and maybe got over the pinstripe tripwire they keep going over?
Yeah, you know, Derek, the Twins were looking to take another step. And Twins teams in the past, when they had their run in the 2000s with the Torrey Hunter and Michael Kadire-led teams, you know, they kind of tweaked after some of those seasons when they won the division, but they never really made a hard push to try to find a player that could put them over the top. And they were determined to try to take a bigger step this offseason. And they did so with Josh Donaldson. They also, you know, traded a kid that throws 102 miles an hour in Brudstar Gratterall to the Dodgers for Kenta Maeda. And Maeda was in the rotation. And he, although he's not a difference maker, I mean, he's not a top end rotation guy, you know, but he's a mid to back end guy who can extend things. And I think he's looking for an opportunity to start more after being yo-yoed in and out of the rotation by the Dodgers, who might have been fearful of Maeda hitting too many of his performance bonuses if he is a starter. So,
shocker. The Dodgers massaging starts and massaging the DL or IL time. God, the things they do, eventually you figure that's going to catch up with them. They're pretty smart about how they use the elasticity of a roster and pitching definitions to make the most of it.
Yeah, and eventually you reap what you sow in most cases, you know, and it comes
back. That's why they haven't won.
Yeah, maybe it is. And so Donaldson was there, and for a team to hit 307 home runs, to add someone like Donaldson seems to be like overkill in a little bit. But in addition to the potential power, they wanted a guy who could also, you know, push them in another direction, you know, in the clubhouse as well. And Donaldson's one of the game's great competitors, one of the more guys on the field who shows his fieriness on and off the field. And they wanted that type of effect. They think that they've got a great combination now because they have the old wise man in the clubhouse, and Nelson Cruz, who's seen it all, done it all, and who was a great influence on a lot of guys last year, especially Miguel Sano. Miguel Sano had the best year of his career last year, you know, lockering next to Cruz and following him around. And so now on the other end of that chemistry spectrum, you've got the fiery Josh Donaldson, who can make those impassioned speeches or who can engage players a little more passionately when stuff is going wrong on the field. So the Twins felt that they were improving in multiple ways by adding Josh Donaldson to the roster. So now you have Donaldson at third. You have Miguel Sano at first, where he's probably better suited. Cruz, DH, and still a core in its prime in Jorge Polanco Max Kepler. I guess I got to put the catcher Mitch Garver in there, who had kind of a breakout season last year. And yeah. then guys like Eddie Rosario and Byron Buxton, who want to bounce back from either underperforming or just being injured. It's a dangerous team, and they're prepared to bludgeon their way through the postseason because they don't have a Washington Nationals type pitcher leading the rotation. They have a very good guy in Jose Barrios. And I also believe like there's times that you could be a good pitcher and have a year where you pitch like an ace. And I think Barrios could have one of those type seasons, like a Rick Porcello. A good pitcher, but he jumped up, won the Cy Young 1 year. You know, there's that magical year where everything kicks in, and it's definitely possible from Barrios's aspect. They brought back Jake Odorizzi on a 1 year, or Odorizzi accepted the qualifying offer, and man, you know what? And he was betting on himself by taking the qualifying offer. If he had waited, he probably could have got a nice deal in free agency. So he takes a qualifying offer, and now this thing hits. And he's going to be thrown back on a probable depressed market after the 2020 season.
Great point.
Because of the economic shutdown, kind of feel bad for the guy who was trying to gamble on himself and kind of roll snake eyes there. But he stepped up last year, and there were rumblings that he added another mile or two to his fastball. During the offseason, because he's a big pitching ranch guy. He would go to Randy Sullivan's pitching ranch, Florida.
Oh yeah.
And work on his mechanics, and he's a high fastball guy too because of his delivery. It seemed like he was starting to come into his own in terms of understanding his mechanics and how effective he could be. There were a lot of positive things going on with the squad. Yeah, they also have Rich Hill again, who was supposed to not enter the rotation in mid-July, and Michael Pineda, who they signed, who has to serve the final 29 games of his suspension for failing the drug test. So they've got a starting rotation of about six guys who can go in there. So the starting rotation maybe was not impactful up front, but it was definitely deep the farther you go. And they've got that terrific offense and a decent defense, although Luis Arias and Jorge Polanco up the middle isn't the greatest defensive combination, but still, this was a team that everybody believed they were ready to take the next step forward when all this happened, and the Twins were seeing, you know, group sales come back and season tickets were spiking.
Oh, good.
They were expecting, what was it, 2.5 million fans or something. There were projections of, you know, like about 30,000 a game for attendance.
Wow.
Everything was looking good for this squad. And it still can be once there's baseball back. And with Rocco Baldelli's impact in his first year as manager,
you're fine.
I remember when I first started covering baseball, my first year was 1995, covering the Kansas City Royals. For Kansas City Star.
That's where we first met, yeah.
That's right. And so I walk in the clubhouse at 3:30. And like half the team isn't there, you know, guys are still sauntering in, you know, getting ready for games because that's the way it was. Then all of a sudden there was a period where you had no chance of beating players to the clubhouse. You know, they're getting there as early as 1:30. They get their treatment in, you know, Joe Maurer, you know, would begin a 5-hour process to get ready to play, you know, that night, you know, with the hot and cold tubs and all the massages and stuff. You know, it seems like most of the team was already there by the time you got to the clubhouse. Now it's going back to the 25 years ago. You know, Rocco Baldelli wants players to get as much rest as possible and does not want them in the clubhouse. And there's been times where they have told players if they've had like a long extra inning game the night before or coming back from a long road trip, show up at 4:30, show up at 5, show and go, they called it. And get ready for games. It's amazing to watch how the attitudes about preparation and training and routine have evolved over the 25 plus years I've covered baseball. And now I got a guy in Baldelli. We have a nap room at Target Field. So that Cruz.
Wait, the media does?
No, the Cruz does.
Oh.
sorry for using we. That was a bad. It'd be great for the.
Oh
media.
No, I would have totally expected it. I was like, wait, what? That Target Field has everything.
Now, when they were courting Cruz. Cruz just said, hey, do you guys have a nap room? And they were like, we can have one if you need one. And I guess
Cruz, that's awesome.
He's always been a big nap guy. He has to take a nap in the mid to late afternoon.
Like a hockey player.
Yeah. And then he would pop up and he's ready to play. So there is one there. And Josh Donaldson was interested in trying it out too. So, so
well, they have to nap at 6 feet socially distant parameters.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, if you have a bunk bed, maybe you have to have one 6 feet higher than the other one, you know?
Oh, that'd be epic. Man, I've always wanted a bunk bed.
There you go. So, yeah, so things have changed. And Rocco
Bonta. First place I ever saw a bunk bed was in Minnesota, was in the Twin Cities. So it was the first time I ever saw a bunk bed. I was visiting as a really little kid with my mom, visiting a relative up there, and I saw a bunk bed. I'm like, this is amazing.
I think the first time I saw one was in college, my freshman year in Illinois, and I walked into the dorm room and saw a bunk bed for the first time. So,
yeah.
But man, yeah. So just Rocco's influence on this team about rest and recovery, it kind of like resonated with Cruz and a bunch of other guys as far as preparing for games. And I think it was another reason why they had such a successful season, because Rocco was always looking out for the welfare of his players.
All of that feeds into like one of the questions I want to ask you about the Twins. I had a chance to talk with Paul DeYoung, the Cardinals shortstop, for a video that we did for the Post-Dispatch website, stltoday.com, gratuitous plug. And one of the things he said was that, you know, however the game comes back, a team has to be ready for a sprint, not a marathon. And that's like a different mentality for baseball, because you think about like the length of spring training, you think about looking down the road of 162 games and the physical maintenance required for the travel, the number of games, just the innings, the things on the hours in a day on your feet, those kind of things that you have to mentally prepare yourself as well as physically prepared for a, you know, marathon and just the grind. He said in this condensed window, when it comes back, there's a really good chance that the team that is better at sprinting is going to stand out, that, you know, you have to be ready for that. How are the nap room aside, how are the Twins geared toward a sprint with the power lineup they have, with the pitching they have?
Well, that's a great question. I think the Twins needed some time to get going last season. Before the bats came alive, I remember, I think the first road trip of the year, they did hit 8 home runs in a game at Baltimore. But everybody hit 8 home runs against the Orioles last year. So I'm not sure if that counted. But it seemed like May, June, they hit 8 home runs at Anaheim. And I think people were all of a sudden said, you know what, this is real. And they kind of surged after that, I believe. But I don't know if they're built for a sprint. You know, they're a team that's built on power and beating teams into submission. Well, how do you fashion a team to get out of the gates really quickly? Unless you need time for your pitches to. Well, I guess health would be an issue. You know, if your team is healthy, you got a chance to have your best players on the field at the same time. And the Twins are going to be healthy. Byron Buxton was coming off of a shoulder problem last year, but he was on track to be ready for opening day. And this layoff has probably helped him get even more healthy. And the Twins are a different team. They're like 58, and I think they're 27 games over 500 when Buxton was in the lineup or something last year, because he gives that element of speed and that defensive excellence in center field that just puts him up another level. So he'll be available at the beginning of the year. As I said before, Rich Hill will be available at the beginning of the year. So the Twins have the capability of having all their players healthy and ready to perform right at the start of the season. All their best players, too. They don't have any long-term injuries that are knocking anyone out for, like, the season. So I would imagine health would be a component. And youth health, so you got a bunch of guys in their prime. You got a couple of veterans in Cruz and Donaldson that the Rocco's got to be careful with, because he doesn't want – that's going to be interesting, too. If it's a sprint, how does Baldelli's penchant for resting players affect some of his roster decisions, decisions, you know? Will he be more? Will he be a little more pressured or feel a little more the urgency to keep Cruz and Donaldson in the lineup more often? You know, but this whole sprint thing is going to be rather fascinating to see how it turns out. See, I'm just looking it up right here. The Twins were 17-10 in April last year. And then in May, they were 21-8. Hmm. So they got to start last year. All right. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
they
won yeah.
in May. Yeah. In May, they finished, the 2-4-6-8. Yeah. They won 8 out of 10 to finish up May. When they got to June, they were rolling pretty good.
Well, they got to feast on the division they were in. I mean,
right.
that's part of it, right? I mean, they got it. Their schedule when they got to, chew up the Tigers and chew on the White Sox, they had a little bit of an or face the Royals, when those division games would cluster for them, I would imagine they won a lot of games. They feasted right. on teams that were, advertised how poor they were going to be.
Yeah, and if we're going to have a merger with the NL Central this year, you look at that division. I think the Pirates are the only team that probably
yeah the only team
a bottom feeder.
Yeah.
The other teams are going to bring something to the table. So being able to sprint out of the gate is going to be a little more challenging for the Twins in this new format. So many tentacles to this thing. As we talk more and more about getting off to fast starts and competition and scheduling we weren't prepared for about 3 or 4 months ago.
Exactly. And I think that, in some ways the flyover division or the breadbasket division, whatever we come up with the nickname for it, may be an edge for the teams involved in it. Because as you mentioned, the longest drive might be the Twins to the Reds. Everything else is within that range.
Right.
I can't, maybe Twins to Pittsburgh, but, I'm not so sure. But, you have, you have a drivable division, and that's going to limit travel. The teams are flying the shorter flights.
Right.
You think about teams could camp out, like you said, in Chicago. They could also spend a week and play the Brewers and the Twins with that drive. You could spend a week in Missouri and play both teams. It's just, you could go Cleveland, Pittsburgh very easily. You don't need to hop on a plane there. I think that the constraint of geography or the kind of the tightly bound geography of the division may help for that. One of the things that Tony La Russa always talked about in spring training was that April was, that they had spring training for a reason, that it was to get ready to be at full speed in April. It was not to get ready to be healthy, to warm up in April. And he always saw that as an edge. If he could have a team that was warming up and ready to go at high RPM from opening day, while other teams found their footing and found their identity and pitchers started to build pitch count and stuff like that, he always saw that as an edge, that you could feast on teams that weren't ready in April and get off to a start that might give you some cushion for when those teams start playing better, or when, the heat of July arrives or things like that. I always thought that was interesting, and maybe that puts a sharper focus on just how these teams spend this camp 2.0, the 2 week, 3 week thing that they want to have, that they need to have. And also how teams run that. Do you know the Twins, do they want to go back to Fort Myers for spring training or Target Field? Do you have a feel for that?
Oh, cool. I'm glad you brought that up, because I just wrote about that. It's actually online today at startribune.com. Just a little bit of update with the Twins. Rocco Baldelli and Derek Falvey, Rocco the manager and Derek Falvey the president of baseball operations, they basically have said, we got to start getting ready now. If we want to have a camp that opens June 10th and try to play first week in July, we got to start making some plans here. And so they're making plans. They're also trying to account for contingency plans and maybe contingency off the contingency plans as well. But they are preparing for both. It sounds like if they stay in Minneapolis, they can handle that fine. But if they go back to Fort Myers, it may be better from a structural standpoint, where you can be spread out all over campus and everybody can get work in at the same time, and have some minor leaguers around too. They're preparing for both scenarios. They haven't preferred one. I know I've talked to Rocco on the side, and Rocco has I think Rocco actually would want to stay in Minnesota. He thinks it'd be easier for everyone if they're located in the city and could practice at Target Field and have groups staggered, throughout the afternoon and get workouts in. But the problem is, and Derek Falvey said this in the story today, is that how do you play games? You can, how many inner squad, a team can only play so many inner squad games.
Right.
Pitchers have to get their arms built up to, I guess, at least get to 80 pitches before they can start the season. So you're going to have a stretch of games. And so, well, I know one theory that someone threw at me was that the Twins would play inner squad games for about 2 weeks of the 3 week period. And then last week, maybe they could try to have a quick home and home with Milwaukee or yeah, club and get ready that way. And I just don't know if that's effective because if you're playing games, inter squad games, you know, when's the workout for the rest of the players and things like that. And I don't know how it functions. I think it's easier if everybody goes back to Florida.
Right.
And Fort Myers has become a pretty good hub because now the Braves are like within a half an hour drive over the Twins.
Yeah. You could have the overlap. Yeah.
So you have the Raves, Braves, Twins, and Red Sox all in the same area. And basically, they could just take turns playing each other if everybody's in Florida. So I don't know. It's just fascinating to see what they're going to come up with on so many levels as far as where training camp's going to be, how they're going to craft a schedule. Will they craft a schedule so road trips are all geographically, you know? Will the Twins go on a Cleveland, Detroit, Pittsburgh run, you know, where they could just hit the road in between each city or just something like that?
Right, just a stopover in Missouri. That's got to make sense, you know, right, as far as available. I don't know. You know, the Cardinals would prefer to have the games here in St. Louis if they get the okay. Or not the games, I'm sorry. Of course, they want their home games in St. Louis. But their spring training 2.0 in St. Louis, if they can get the permission from MLB. And I asked that exact question. Is like, what does that mean for exhibition games? Would you possibly go without games? Would the first game that a team plays be the first game of the regular season? And John Mozeliak, the president of baseball operations, said, he goes, I think the way to understand this is that the emphasis is on getting games back, not getting exhibition games back. And I thought that was an interesting way to look at it. You know, that everything that they need to do as far as where they are, the schedule they set, the staggered workouts that they have, that it's all focused on towards actually resuming a season. And that, you know, way, way, way down the list is like exhibition games. And, you know, it's an interesting prioritization of how to get ready for a regular season. Lavelle, what has stood out to you about the ongoing back and forth, the seesaw of negotiations and discussions with the players and the owners? Do you see cause for optimism? Do you see overwhelming skepticism? What kind of stands out in those discussions to you?
I see both sides. It seems like right now they're not even trying to tackle the compensation part of it right now.
Safety first.
It's been safety first, and I think the players needed to go that route because when they initially balked about the possibility of agreeing to more pay cuts or pay reductions, and Blake Snell came out and says, "I gotta get paid, man, or I ain't playing. My life's at stake." You know, it was a bad look for the players, and I think they needed to get the attention off of that and on other things. And I think focusing on health is a big thing. We did a conference call with Nelson Cruz the other day.
Yeah.
Because he was a finalist for the Muhammad Ali Sports Humanitarian Award.
That's cool.
Which is given out on the ESPYs every year.
Yeah, and that's really cool.
We were talking about the discussions between the players and the owners. And the one thing Cruz brought up that was concerning to him about is the fact they can't take showers after games.
Yeah.
And he said, we may be playing in Kansas City and we may have to go to Chicago for a game, but we're supposed to go straight from the ball field to the plane or the flight without even taking a shower. He says, that sounds a little crazy. And I was like, yeah, and I started thinking, well, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I know you want to be safe, but you're going to risk hygiene, just general hygiene, to achieve social distancing. That didn't make sense. So, So I think
a lot of the muscle memory stuff, like you're going to really stop. What's the penalty if a pitcher licks his finger? Is he suspended for a game? What's the repercussion there?
I got this question asked of me in the mailbag, and I came back and said, I don't know how they're going to police the whole spitting thing. You know,
yeah.
Tell me that the dugout's going to suddenly turn from being this trough of various fluids, something that's going to be like cleaner. It's impossible. First, everybody spits. Well, as soon as you walk into the bathroom in the morning, you're brushing your teeth and you're spitting. You know, everybody spits. You know, how are you going to stop this? Unless you look the other way while the players like run behind the dugout and run down the tunnel to spit or something, because it's going to be spitting. There's going to be saliva involved. It's going to be, you know, some guys like to just swirl Gatorade around their mouths and spit it out. I mean,
right, like a boxer.
Yeah. So I've seen some objections to the hygiene and the spitting and actually the players have demanded daily testing. You know.
Yeah.
And that's one thing as sports as a whole may have to grapple with at the same time is that if you want to test every day, you're taking testing kits away from the general public, and it's going to be a fine line that they're going to have to walk there to make sure that the public has access to things that may be going to sports teams on a daily basis.
It's almost one for one, right? Like if you have one test for your sports team, you should provide one for the general public. I mean, I don't know if that's possible. It doesn't seem like it's feasible with the number of tests you're talking about for pro sports. But it almost is like that would be the way to do it. Sort of like the, you know, you spend a dollar, you know, you donate a dollar kind of thing.
Right.
But God, you're right. I mean, it's a hard thing to kind of process all the muscle memory that would change. There's a lot of moving parts, a lot of hurdles that, you know, the thing that I keep coming back to is what's a visual change, what's one for optics, and what's a substantive change. And once we kind of have an understanding of that, but it's a tremendous buy-in from the players to change their habits, you know, and we'll see. I mean, it's going to be a different game. I worry that it's also going to be a far longer game because of all these things, all these, you know, parameters in place. It's going to add to the sluggish pace of play. So we'll see what that does.
I've been watching a lot of the Korean Baseball Association games.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes I've had to go through some issues, just not having a routine, and a lack of purpose on a daily basis. So I've been up late at night watching some of these Korean League games, and then some of them have been going by pretty quick. And what they've discovered is one thing is that, you know, players just walk up to the plate and get in the box and start hitting. It's not this wait for your walk-up music to come on so you can make your grandpa set procession to the plate. You know, so there's like a little bit of a better play.
Interesting.
Hey, they're staying around in the batter's box a little bit more. You know, so the games are moving along, and plus your players are not playing up to the fans because there's no fans to play up to. You know, there's no fans to draw energy from or to point up to or to pound a fist, you know, shake a fist at.
Yeah.
So it seems like these games have moved along at a little bit better rate. But players having their old habits, maybe it would be hard for them to get to that point right at the beginning.
All right. So last thing I want to ask you is how this has been. You kind of a little bit alluded to it there. How has this been for you? How has been covering baseball without baseball games been? I mean, have you, you know, it's not the ideal situation. Has it inspired more creative coverage? Has it allowed you time to search, you know, for things and find stories you otherwise wouldn't have because you would be in a line to, you know, to go through TSA to get on another plane. What has this been like for you, Lavelle?
Well, it's been rather interesting. First of all, I just want to thank my bosses at the Star Tribune for allowing me to continue to draw a paycheck. Although we all had to take 4 days of furlough here in recent weeks, but
yeah, we had 2 weeks. Yeah,
our sports section I think has shrunk down to 4 pages a day, and so they wanted for me and Phil Miller, my cohort, is to come up with two or three twin stories a week. And we've been able to do that. And the Twins have been good about getting players on conference calls or, you know, I have many phone numbers that I just call players to talk to them. So it's been a little bit of a challenge to trying to cover a team during a pandemic, but, you know, it's been so interesting. I ended up writing actually an interesting story, and it just popped out of nowhere. But the St. Paul Saints in the Independent League, there's a chance they may be the Twins AAA affiliate next year.
Fascinating.
Because of the restructuring of the minor league baseball, which is being discussed as we speak. Man, Major League Baseball's got a lot of talks going on right now.
Yeah.
So, So
it's a good thing they don't have games, right? I mean, I guess they have so many things to deal with, but it's never a good thing not to have games. I shouldn't say it, but
so I kind of got a lot. I kind of got into that and just kind of wrote the heck out of it. And here, Patrick Royce, longtime columnist. I'm kind of going off the rails a little bit.
It's okay.
You have to have a good idea to have a story, but to write a blog, all you need is a thought. Okay. But now my editor is telling us on the other end during this time, hey, if you're blogging something, it's a good chance it's going to end up in the paper. So now our thought ended up getting in the paper, you know. So Phil Miller's been writing a lot about, he just wrote a story about the best team of players that did not sign with the Twins, which Colton Wong actually is on that team, on that list.
Interesting.
Wong was drafted by the Twins at a high school, but he didn't sign. Like George is like the center fielder on this team. So ended up being an interesting team. We've done historical stories. I did a story on there are Twins fans who are still lamenting the fact that in 1992, some unknown guy named Eric Fox hit a 3-run homer of Rick Aguilera in the 9th inning in a game at the Dome, in which allowed the A's to sweep the Twins, and the Twins were never the same. It's called the Eric Fox game. And so I wrote about that, and it brought old anger. Yeah, we've been doing a lot of historical stories. Kent Herbeck was the first Minnesota athlete to earn $1 million in a season. So I got in touch with Herbeck to talk about that and what was it like to have that deal negotiated at the time. So we've done a lot of historical things, and online, we've been doing a lot of things online. We had a fantasy sports draft that was streamed on our website, in which reporters and editors got together, had a sports draft of their favorite sports movies. It really interesting, because our Gopher football writer got the first overall pick, and she took Friday Night Lights, you know, and I'm like, what? You know, so from the beginning, there was controversy, and I'm trying to defend baseball. So I'm picking baseball movies every chance I got. But then I'm in the third round, and like Ali was still available, but Will Smith, you can't pass up Ali. So stuff like that's been going on, in which we've been trying to engage with our readers. It's been a weird thing too, because our online readership has gone up. We just had a company note passed the other day. We just had our 100,000th online subscription. So,
congrats.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
That's exciting. I mean, you know, I mean, in a time when the news business is tricky and depressed, and you know, and so many businesses are having challenges, to have an achievement like that is great. You know, I mean, I'm working on a project that will run probably in conjunction with this podcast. And you know, it's this 8-day project, and there'll be a story every day. And you know, there was someone who wanted to buy an ad attached to it. That's a good thing. That's a great thing to support local journalism. And you know, we have had a lot of readers, and you know, Cardinals coverage obviously gets a lot of attention. You know, there's a strong fan base, a devoted fan base, and the Post-Dispatch has a great history of baseball coverage that I try my best to keep up with. And, you know, it can be a draw, and we realize that it can be, you know, I mean, it can be both a distraction, but also informative. And we've tried to balance that a little bit, or I personally have tried to balance that. Like, not every story has to say, hey, reminder, there's no games because of coronavirus. We can do stories that, like, you know, that do touch on history, that do touch on people, that do touch on personality, that do, you know, maybe would get lost during the regular season, or maybe I wouldn't have time to tell, or maybe, you know, wouldn't have a chance to talk to the player. I did a story just about how Paul Goldschmidt and I, for the last year and a half, have, you know, talked about books back and forth and book recommendations. And, you know, it was a different type of story. I probably would have done it during a regular season, but it would have been a different tone to it, maybe. Or maybe there wouldn't have been time to sit and talk for an hour about his favorite books. But we could this time. And, you know, maybe I hope that fans learned something a little bit more about him. It's a more personal story in the sense that they probably learned a little bit more about me than I'm used to writing. But that's how it is, you know, and it's where we are. So it's been a good test of creativity. Last part, and this is where I was going with the question, is are you one to buy in then to the storytelling, the romance of baseball, and thus maybe the role it could have in the revival of the country, the culture, the community after this virus? Do you think, how important do you think that is, and how optimistic are you that it'll happen?
See, I'm still a believer that nothing can unite a fan base or a community like baseball, just because it's every day and it's during the summer when people are looking for things to do. I just think it has that hold on America, and I still think in some ways that makes it the pastime. And I also think that baseball writing, because of the daily access that we have, allows us to humanize players better than any other sport. Just like what you just discussed about your story with Paul Goldschmidt. That was an awesome story, it sounds like. So I just believe that those things can just strengthen people's beliefs about what they think about the game and the people who are involved with the game, and allows us to storytell. I just think that's a great thing about being a ball writer. And it makes baseball fans also rather unique as well.
As well said, man. That's why I like talking baseball with you, Lavelle. We have the same thought. You know, baseball is ubiquitous and omnipresent, and that gives it a place, because you can always go to find a baseball game. You know, when baseball is going, when communities are up, back and running, it's a good bet, and I hope this continues, even with the negotiations with the minor leagues. It's a good bet you can go somewhere to find a baseball game, either to attend it or to watch it or to listen on the radio. One of baseball's best traits is that it's always there. That's also one of its worst traits when it comes to being compared to other sports, because it's not appointment viewing, just because it's always there. But I think, you know, the tales that would be told, you know, anything that follows from where our country goes, you have to figure that baseball will be one of the narrative spines of its return.
No doubt. Undoubtedly. Absolutely. That's why it's great.
Thank you so much, Lavelle. Thanks so much for joining me, for giving me a perspective, for giving us a perspective of the Twins and the division that the Cardinals likely are to be joining here. Imagine that the fallout will be a lot more Twins-Cardinals games, not just this year, but in the future as a new CBA comes in and a new look to interleague. So one more chance to cross each other, you know, cross paths with each other. Hopefully not cross each other, cross paths with each other.
It'll be great.
And we can work on the nap room for the media at Target Field.
No doubt. It'd be great to see you in the press box again, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely, Lavelle. I hope you're doing healthy, and thank you so much for joining me.
All right, man. You take it easy, and best of luck to you going forward.
A special thanks to Star Tribune baseball writer Lavelle Neal, who, truth be told, was really the first person to get me involved in Baseball Writers Association of America. You can find Lavelle Neal's work at the Star Tribune website. That's startribune.com. Or, of course, follow him on Twitter at Lavelle Neal. That's LaveLleNeal. Lavelle Neal there on Twitter. I urge you to follow him there because, you know, getting in the low of the AL Central could be helpful if baseball is able to get off the ground and begin the 2020 season. You can find all of the Cardinals coverage at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. This week is an 8-part series over 8 days looking at the future of every position for the Cardinals. That's from catcher, where Ivan Herrera stars as a possible prospect, out to the outfield, which began the series on Sunday, looking at the next 3 outfield starters that could be there at some point in time for the Cardinals. Of course, you know Dylan Carlson, but the other 2 players you might not know. They're in the distant. They're raw. That's what scouts say of them, but they're there. And we want to take a look at not only what players might be on the horizon for the Cardinals, but also what holes they have to fill in the organization. And some of these stories will not have exact answers for the future of the position, because the Cardinals still have to address that, either via draft, via signing, or via trade. You can find that at stltoday.com. That will also be the subject of the next podcast that I pull off, and look for videos that are specifically geared towards that series of stories about future Cardinals. Of course, as the week unfolds and news rises from Major League Baseball and its players' unions and the discussions they're having about how to restart the season, you will also find the coverage there. As it gets closer to when camps want to open, this week
the Cardinals will have more activities, structured, scheduled, small group activities at Roger Dean Stadium for the first time since just before St. Patrick's Day. So it'll be really the first time the facility has opened in more than 2 months. Players will start gathering there, and there will be legitimate baseball activities both in Jupiter and also baseball activities at Busch Stadium in St. Louis. So they're starting to gear up in hopes of having a season, and they want to be ready for it. You can find the best podcast in baseball also at stltoday.com or anywhere you get your podcasts. And on iTunes, you can listen to individual episodes, download individual episodes, or subscribe. Subscriptions make the sponsorship possible, and sponsors make the weekly podcast possible. You can also rate and review. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. Get organized with Closet by Design of St. Louis. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN. Closet by Design of St. Louis, the official sponsor of the best podcast in baseball, which will be back early this week with a conversation about prospects. Until then, for the best podcast in baseball, I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. Talk to you soon. Stay healthy. Stay informed.